Appreciate you guys being here today so much. And we're in week two of a sermon series. We started last week. We've been looking at the life of this man whose name is Nehemiah. And if you missed last week, or maybe you dozed off during my sermon, I keep an eye on some of you. Let me just catch you up with where we're at here. For a period of 50 years, the Jewish people were in exile. They were in captivity in a place called Babylon. The Babylonians had come into Jerusalem, destroyed the temple, took all the gold, took all the silver, took all the good stuff, left, took the Jews with them. We're talking about, you know, several hundred thousand people that were taken. And so for 50 years they were there. And then one day in Babylon, there was a new king by the name of Cyrus, and he wrote a proclamation or a law, if you will. And he said, any Jewish person who wants to return back to Jerusalem is free to go. In the book of Ezra, which comes right before Nehemiah, we see that about 50,000 people decided to take this, so we're 800 miles away, they decided to take this 800-mile journey back to Jerusalem. So some stayed, some left, but they were going back, and I think about that, how exciting it was. I was just talking to someone today that came back kind of home, and I kind of know that feeling, how it feels to be gone for a while and then to come back home, and how exciting it must have been for them to travel back and think, you know, hey, we're going to rebuild our homes, we're going to rebuild our businesses, and most of all, we're going to rebuild the temple back to the way it used to look before it was destroyed. It had lie in ruins. And it was so exciting. Unfortunately, if you've read the book of Ezra, for Ezra and the Jewish people, the excitement didn't last very long, because as they were building, or rebuilding rather, the temple, they received some opposition. Several people who had been living in the area, remember they had been gone for 50 years, the people came in, and several people who had been there kind of opposed the rebuilding of the temple. They opposed these people coming back and saying, you know, this is our land. And it's like, no, we've been here 50 years. This isn't your land anymore. These aren't your houses anymore. This isn't your area. So it wasn't as glorious as it sounded. And to make matters worse, after almost 4 years of working on the temple, working day and night and doing the best they can to make it look good, when they finally had what you would call your grand opening, a lot of the older Jewish people who had remembered the glory of Solomon's temple came back and said, that's it? That's the temple? That's nothing like it used to look like. So can you imagine how it must have felt for Ezra and some of these Jewish people to spend all this time, travel all this way, work on the temple for 4 years just to have their own people say, really? This is it? This is the best you could do? So what started out as something glorious kind of crashed down real quick. And for all the work and hard work they had done, how defeating it must have been to not only face opposition from the people who were there, but to also face opposition from some of their own people as they were rebuilding. You know, the once glorious city of Jerusalem was kind of a far cry from what it had been before the Babylonians came. And to get to that point is where we begin the book of Nehemiah. That's where Nehemiah stepped in. And Nehemiah was not in Jerusalem in the beginning of the book. He's still back in Babylon. He works for the king. He's a cup bearer. He's someone who tastes the king's drinks before the king drinks them to make sure that no one is trying to poison him. And if you were here last week, I asked for someone to be my cup bearer to test my coffee before the sermon, just to make sure no one's trying to put anything funny in there. But no one volunteered for that job yet. I'm still waiting, so. So Nehemiah hears that some people have just returned from Jerusalem, and he wants to hear a report of how things are going. And the report is not good. We looked at this. It's chapter 1, verse 3 of Nehemiah. Nehemiah wrote the book. He said, they said to me, those who survived the exile and are back in the province are in great trouble and disgrace. He said, the wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates have been burned with fire. So the temple was rebuilt, but the walls surrounding the temple, in other words, the protection for the temple, was burned down. The gates were burned, the timbers were burned, the stones were broken down, and it was just not a good time. And after hearing how bad things are and thinking how good they were going to be, when Nehemiah gets this bad report, the next verse tells us that he cried. He was so sad that he cried. And here's something important for us to notice about Nehemiah's reaction. Yes, he cried. Yes, he was sad. But he didn't just sit there and be negative about it and complain about it. He actually got up and did something about it. He went to the king who he worked for, and he said, King, could you write me a letter of passage to the governors on the way to Jerusalem, giving me safe passage? Remember, they're still in captivity somewhat there. He said, that way I can show them the letter and say, nope, this is from the king. You have to let me through. King said, yes. He also said, king, if you'd be so gracious, could you talk to Asaph? Asaph was the king, not the king, but he was the keeper of the king's forest. There was a king's forest where they would get all their timbers and great big trees. Could I get some wood to take along with me so I can work on this wall? And the king says, certainly, you can do that. In Nehemiah 2, verse 8, Nehemiah writes this. He says, and because the gracious hand of my God was on me, the king granted my request. You know, Nehemiah didn't take all the credit for what was happening. He was still wise enough to say, you know, it's because of God that I got these things. It's because of God that we're going to be able to do these things. So Nehemiah gathers up all his workers and all these resources and this wood that they will need to rebuild the temple. And they head out on their way towards Jerusalem to try to work on this wall. By now, many of you have probably heard about our Greater Things campaign that's going to run through the end of 2020. If you don't know what I'm talking about, there's some brochures on the brochure rack back there, so make sure to grab one. But many of you have heard about it. And like Nehemiah, the gist is that our leadership sees gaps in our ministry. We see gaps in the walls that we could fix and replace and repair and build up. And we want to do the best that we can for God. We want to give God all the glory for everything that we do. So if we see things that we can make better or do better, we'll try to do that. And that's part of the Greater Things campaign, having a greater spiritual impact on our community and on our world. So today, I want to spend some time, though, looking at Nehemiah and how he overcame opposition in his life. Because all of us, sooner or later, or perhaps even right now, will face opposition. So I'm going to ask you today, if you have a Bible or a phone app, to turn or scroll to Nehemiah. If you like to take notes, there's an outline inside your bulletin today as well, so please check that out. So as I said, maybe you're here today, you're facing this uphill battle, you're facing some opposition or some type of struggle in some aspect of your life. Maybe you heard some bad news, or you were way up on the mountaintop and someone gave you a bad report that's kind of brought you back down, and you're just kind of figuring out, how am I going to get through this? Well, I think the Nehemiah way is a pretty good roadmap to get to where we need to be when we handle opposition. I pointed this out last week, but I think it's really important to highlight it again. The first thing Nehemiah did after he heard this bad news is he prayed to God. The very first thing after he heard that, yes, he heard the bad news, yes, he cried, but then he prayed to God. And you can read that prayer in chapter 1. I went over it a little bit last week, but he prayed to God and he said, God, you know, do this, do that. If you could help us in this area, help me in this area. It should be a good reminder for all of us that anytime we have a desire to fix something in our life or to rebuild, the first thing that we should do, not the second, not the third, the first thing we should do is we should pray to God about it. God, give me direction on this. God, give me the resources that I need. God, give me the people. Surround me with the people that I need to do this. The reason I say that is sometimes in our passion to get things fixed, we become so emotional that we can, sometimes even unintentionally, we can leave God out of the picture. We live in a world where we're full of resources and we often have money and ways and means, is what I'm saying is. But don't forget, don't leave God out of the picture. The first thing you should do when you're facing any type of opposition or an uphill battle is you should pray to God. Sometimes we hear of a need and we think, well, I can do that by myself. I can handle that. I can do this. I can get together a few people and handle that. Maybe you can. But how much better would it be if you involved God in the process? How much better would it be to put God first and say, God, here's what I think, but God, what do you think? Give me some direction here. Give me some purpose. Give me a way, and most of all, God, keep me by your side. I know that we're all smart people, and as I said, many of us have resources at our hands that we can use, but don't ever forget to involve God in the process first and to put him first in everything that you do. Sometimes, my thing is that sometimes, and perhaps you've seen this as well, the only time people turn to God is when they fail or they really, really, really need his help. Don't wait for those opportunities or those chance of things happening. Just pray to God right away and say, God, give me the resources, give me the time, give me the talent. Tell me what to do here, God. Father, help me in this situation. Don't put yourself above God when it comes to problems or opposition especially. Put God first. I would encourage you today to let the story of Nehemiah remind you to always put God first in everything that you do. And don't ever forget. So while many of us would have been happy to take credit for the timber and take credit for the resources and to take credit for all the great things that Nehemiah was going to do, right, to rebuild this wall, Nehemiah was quick to give credit to God. Did you notice that? He said, God, thank you for the resources that you've given me. It's because of you that this is happening. It's because of you that the king wrote me a letter and is allowing me safe passage. It's not because of anything that we've done. And don't forget that we always should thank God for what he does for us. So once he arrives in Jerusalem, he had his safe passage, he has his timber, he has his wood. The very first thing which is important to notice is that Nehemiah went around and he surveyed the situation. We talked a little bit about this last week, as discovering the issues that create the problem is a good way to solve them. And that's what Nehemiah did. He looked around, walked around at night, he looked at the walls. And what he did is he discovered there was 45 areas in the wall that needed to be fixed. So he picked out 42. I don't know why 42 when there was 45, but that's what he did. He picked out 42 groups of people. He said, you work on this area. You work on that area. You'll work on this area. And he went to work kind of administering what needed to happen here. God has supplied the timbers. God has supplied the people to do the work. And everything is going along great for a while. As usual, opposition will sneak in. As usual, Satan sees an opening and he will come in. And here's the main part of the story that I want to draw your attention to today, because there's so much going on within the story of Nehemiah, but here's a really big part of it. This is one point that you want to catch. If nothing else today, make sure you listen to this point. I've faced it before, perhaps you will as well. Whenever you're doing a good work for the Lord, expect some opposition. Whenever you're getting ready to do a good work for the Lord, expect some opposition. When you begin to do a good work for the Lord, expect some opposition. Satan will try to seek and destroy and steal all of our joy. Remember, the Jewish people had been gone for years, right? Now all of a sudden they come back and they're rebuilding the temples, they're rebuilding the walls, they're rebuilding their homes, and not everyone is happy about it. There was people, as I said, already living there. They weren't happy about what was happening. Look at chapter 4. It's going to talk a little bit about the opposition here. There's some people that are not happy with what Nehemiah is doing. It says in verse 1, when Sanballat heard that they were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and was greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews. And in the presence of his associates in the army of Samaria, he said, what are those feeble Jews doing? He starts mocking them. Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? He said, can they bring these stones back to life from these heaps of rubble, burned as they are? So while they're up on the wall trying to work and rebuild and all these people are doing things, there's another group of people down there going, what are you doing? What a joke this is. Who do you think you are? Sanballat starts talking, and as if it wasn't bad enough, a guy named Tobiah starts chiming in verse 3. Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, what are they building? Even a fox climbing up on that would break down their wall of stone. They were basically mocking them, ridiculing them, trying to make them feel like no matter what you do, it's not going to be good enough. The important thing to remember here is that Sanballat and Tobiah were part of a group of people, the Samaritans and the Ammonites and others who had been asked to leave by God. Well, so much asked, they were made to leave this area by God when the Jewish people, when the Israelites came in. Don't think for a second that even though it's been 50 years, they've forgotten about that. They know that, yes, the Jewish people used to be here, but we were here now, and now they think they're going to come back? That's not how it works. So they were pretty angry about it. Also, I think it's important for us to look at the reaction of Nehemiah here. Yes, the temple had been redone. Yes, he was working on the wall, but he was facing opposition at every turn. And you would think Nehemiah would not be too happy about that, and I'm sure he wasn't. What do you think the first thing he did when people were making fun of him, when people were mocking him? He didn't say, knock it off or I'm going to kill you. Hey, knock it off or we're going to have a whole bunch of people come. No, the first thing that he did is what? He prayed. That's what we should do. The first thing he did is pray. And Nehemiah prayed. He looked out at Sanballat. He looked out at Tobiah and he bent down his head and he said, Father, I pray for these people. I pray you would give them a burning, itching rash that would never stop. I pray you would give them laryngitis. No. It's not what he said. So, lady was looking in her Bible. I don't see that. What version is this guy using? That's not what he said. I'm joking, kind of. That's what we want to pray. That's what I put. That's what people want to pray when people annoy us, right? That's not what Nehemiah did. He didn't pray for revenge. He didn't pray that they would be killed, although I will say he did pray that their insults would be turned back to them. He said, the insults that they're giving us, Father, turn them back to him. But he didn't pray for revenge. He didn't pray for them to be killed. He just prayed that their insults would be turned back. Even though he probably had some ideas of what should happen to them, he didn't pray for their punishment. He was wise enough to allow God to handle that part of the situation. And why was that? Because Nehemiah had a job to do. Nehemiah had a good work to do. It wasn't his job to seek redemption. It wasn't his job to follow around Sanballat and Tobiah and all these other people that were making fun of him. It was his job to pray. And we need to remember that this morning. You see, there's another example of how to handle negativity in our life. And so many times you're doing a good job at work or in your family or at home or somewhere else. And someone has to come down and try to tear you off the wall. Have you ever felt like you're doing a really good work and you're trying to build something up or rebuild something and there's like people just down there going, it's like, what? Like, why are people having to always try to tear us down off the wall? Many times I want to tell you that's Satan trying to tear you down off the wall. Nehemiah, it's important to remember, he didn't let a few negative voices stop him from doing the work that he felt God was calling him to do. And I want to tell you, he faced opposition. He faced a lot of trouble. Large groups of people were banding together to stop him from rebuilding that wall. The physical strength, it says in the scriptures, the physical strength of his own laborers was wearing out, hauling these huge timbers, lifting up these stones, trying to rebuild the wall. The other Jews, it also says, who were living in the area, were worried about their own lives. They're on the outside going, hey, we're not even a part of what Nehemiah is doing. Why are you trying to attack us? Because you're Jewish. It's like, well, go talk to him. So there was a lot of pressure. To top it all off, there was also a severe famine in the area during this time. So it wasn't, I want you to know, the reason I said that, I want you to know, it wasn't just a couple people that were trying to bring Nehemiah down. It looked like a lot of things were coming down, and Nehemiah had two choices. What was his choice? Keep building or give up? That's what you need to think about. Am I going to keep building or am I going to give up? Am I going to get through it? Am I going to pray to God or am I going to give up? And I thought to myself, man, there was a reason that God chose a cupbearer who lived over 800 miles away to do this job. And that's because he knew Nehemiah was the person for the job. So when you're surrounded by negativity and you're surrounded by people trying to pull you down off the wall and you're going, why do I have to be the one? Why do I always have to be the one that handles this situation? I'm telling you, because God knows. The same reason he picked Nehemiah, who lived 800 miles away, that was a cupbearer, because he knows that Nehemiah, and he knows you, are the person for that job. And instead of quitting or complaining or seeking revenge, you know what Nehemiah did? He had one of his greatest moments since he came to Jerusalem. I call this Nehemiah's Braveheart moment. Guys, if you remember the movie, when Mel Gibson stands up and he gives this big passionate speech right before they go to war, this is Nehemiah's moment. Look at verse 13. He stands up and he challenges people to finish the job that they started. Here's what he wrote. He said, therefore, I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, posting them by families with their swords and spears and bows. And after I looked things over, I stood up and I said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, don't be afraid of them. Don't be afraid of them, he said. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your families and your sons and your daughters and your wives and your homes. What he was reminding them is that the work that he was doing was bigger than just them. It was bigger than Nehemiah. It was bigger than Ezra. It was bigger than even the Jewish people. It was a large work, and they weren't supposed to let a few people stop them from doing that. Because it was bigger than them. It was for their families and their sons and their daughters and their sons and daughters of them. And it goes on and on and on. And as we do the Greater Things campaign, don't think to yourself, well, that's not for me. It's not for you. It's for your kids and your grandkids and people that you don't even know yet. It's for the people who could be sitting here today in these empty chairs that we're not reaching. So don't ever think for a second that anything you do is just for you. It's for the Lord, and we need to stand up and fight and not give up and don't get distracted. Nehemiah, he goes on to tell them, he said, you know what, when you're working, put a hammer in one hand and a sword in the other hand, and you just keep working and keep watching. You keep working and you keep watching. That's what I want to encourage you for today. If you're facing that uphill battle, if you're trying to rebuild something that's been broken, don't give up. Keep working. But keep a sword in one hand and keep an eye out. And don't let people drag you down. In other words, what Nehemiah said, we're not going to let a few people stop us from doing what we came to do. We came to do a great work, and we're going to finish this great work. The lesson we can learn from this is this, and this is pretty cool, that God's always looking for people to stand in the gaps. Right now, today, I need to tell you that you might just come to church here, or you might just be visiting, or maybe you've been coming here a long time, or maybe you think, well, I'm not the preacher, so what do I have to worry about? I'm going to tell you this. God is looking right now today for people to stand in the gaps. The lowest points of the wall, that's where you need to be stationed. That's where you need to be standing. Nehemiah was smart enough to know the lowest points of the wall, that's where people are going to attack first. So station people there. And when you're facing your situation or you're facing your tough time, I'll tell you what, put some people at the lowest point of the wall. I know where my weak points are. I'm not going to point them out to you, but I know where they are. And perhaps you know where your weak points are too. Put some people there for you. Put God there. Pray about it. In order to be successful, we have to be willing to stand in those areas and not let people tear us down. We have to be willing to ask others to stand in that area for us. I have a small group of people I surround myself with who I call, text, or email when I'm facing a Nehemiah-type moment. I'm like, could you pray for me? Could you stand in the gap for me? Certainly we will. What I want you to know today is that you need to put people in the gaps for you. And perhaps as I'm saying that, you're thinking, Tim, I don't have anyone to stand in the gap for me. And I want to tell you today, that's a lie. I would stand in the gap for you if you asked me to. I'll speak for our elders. They would stand in the gap for you. So would our deacons. And I know a lot of people in this church that would stand in the gaps for you as well today. And here's something that I want to tell you. Even if none of those people were willing to stand in the gap for you, God still will. Always has, and He always will have your back. And He will stand in the gap for you, even during your toughest times, even when you feel that no one else is there. He always has, and He always will. The Greatest Thing campaign is getting, Greater Things campaign is getting ready to start in a few weeks, and I told our staff and our leadership weeks ago, I said, guys, I just want to tell you something. Be ready for Satan to attack. Be ready. Because anytime, I'll tell you this until the cows come home, anytime that you're getting ready to do something great for the Lord, Satan is not just going to stand there and wait for it to happen. He's going to try to attack you at your lowest point. He's going to try to come to the lowest point in the wall, because Satan comes to lie, cheat, and steal all the joy from everything and whenever he sees an opportunity. And as I often say, the greater the impact for the kingdom, the greater the fight from Satan. It's when Satan's not attacking that I become worried and say, well, we must not be doing very much because Satan isn't sticking his foot in here. The greater the impact for the kingdom, the more you can expect that Satan's going to come in there with everything that he has. And that's what happened to Nehemiah. Do whatever we can to get him to stop. Do whatever we can to stop this. Later on, after the wall had been completed, you would think that the people would have given up. The wall's completed. They probably gave up. They moved on. No, that's not how it happened. And some of you are like, yep, that's pretty much what happened in my life too. They won't give up. They keep beating me down and beating me down and beating me down. People like Sanballat and Tobiah and others are still trying to drag Nehemiah down. In chapter 6, they ask him to come to a meeting. Look at verse 2. It says, Sanballat and Geshem, there's another person now, sent me this message. Come, let us meet together in one of the villages on the plain of Ono. It sounds so simple. It sounds so great. Hey, Nehemiah, we just want to talk to you. There's a really important lesson in here I want to share with you this morning. It's not really biblical. It's more of just common sense. And so feel free to write it down. There's no extra charge for this today. But here's the thing. Listen, anytime someone's mad at you and they want to meet with you in a place called Ono, don't go. It's common sense, people. just don't go. Nehemiah was wise enough to recognize this too. Look at verse 2. He said, but they were scheming to harm me. He knew better. And sometimes people come at you with this glorious flowery words. Hey, how you doing, buddy? Oh no, don't go. So they were scheming to harm him. They were scheming to do whatever they could to seek, destroy, and steal. Now, I was kidding about the oh no part, kind of, although they did want to meet him in a place called Oh No. But the next verse is one that I've used in my life, and I thought perhaps I would share it with you today if you find yourself struggling with negativity, or perhaps you're in this huge project that's in front of you. Verse 3 will help keep you focused. Nehemiah, he sends a message back to them. He responds to them. He responds to Sanballat and the others in response to being asked to stop what he was doing and come to a meeting. He said in verse 3, listen to this, write this down, people. I am carrying on a great project and I cannot go down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and go down to you? Think about that. Nehemiah says, I'm doing a great work. I'm not coming down off the wall to come and talk to you. I'm doing a great thing for God here, and I am not going to let some negativity bring me down. 4 more times they ask Nehemiah, please, Nehemiah, please, we just want to talk. We just want to have a meeting. And every time Nehemiah says, no, I'm not coming down off the wall. But Nehemiah, I'm not coming down. But Nehemiah, just this one time, no, listen, I'm not coming down off the wall. Could you take that home today with you? I'm not coming down off the wall, and neither should you. I'm doing an important work, and I'm not coming down off the wall. You're doing an important work, and whatever you have before you, you just need to say that. I'm not coming down off the wall. I'm not going to meet. I'm not going to do this. Maybe you're facing a tough time at work because of a jealous boss or a difficult coworker or something. Are you allowing them the joy of tearing you down off the wall? Don't do it. Just stand up and say, no, I'm fighting for my friends and my sons and my daughters and my wives and my country and for God, and I'm not giving up. Maybe you're having some problems in your marriage, and instead of just praying to God first, you're letting people tear you down off the wall. And what I want to say is, don't do it. God is doing some amazing, amazing things at Cross Point. God has done some amazing things here and continues to, and I refuse to let Satan tear me down off the wall. There's days, trust me, there's days, and I've told you this before if you've been here, there's days that I'm just like, fill out my application for Walmart greeter because that's what I want to do. Hi, welcome to Walmart. Hi, welcome to Walmart. What an easy day that would be, wouldn't it? Oh, your bread's stale? Take it to customer service. Hi, welcome to Walmart. There's many times that I've thought about it. Pay's not great, but the stress is, whew. Man. But anytime you're doing something great for the kingdom, what's going to happen? Satan's going to kind of come in, right? I'm doing my best to handle things in the Nehemiah way. And the Nehemiah way, I'm going to go through it one more time real quick for you. If you're facing something, listen, here's the first thing you do is what? You pray. The first thing you do is you pray. The second thing is come to expect opposition when God is leading you in your home, in your work, in your church. You come to expect it. Number 3, find people to stand in the gaps with you. You don't have to do it all alone. You don't have to bear it all alone. Get people to hold you up. And lastly, I refuse to allow people to tear me down off the wall. And you should too. What about you today? In your bulletin it says, are you allowing people to tear you down off the wall? I would guess that there's some people out there right now who are going, yeah, I have. I let them pull me off the wall. I let them distract me. I let them stop the good work I was doing. And I'm telling you today, get back up on the wall and pray to God and expect that opposition. And don't think for a moment that just because there was some opposition that God wasn't in it. Because that's my little soapbox thing is these people have an idea that anytime there's opposition in something, well, God must not have been a part of it because everything bad is happening. How do you know that? Because you say in your mind that that's the reason? Nehemiah faced all kinds of opposition and it was exactly what God wanted him to do. It doesn't mean it's going to be this easy road. Stand there on the wall. Are things like negativity and uphill battles wearing you out? I want you to know, next week we're going to find out what praying and trusting in God can do. And what happened after the walls were rebuilt. And what happened to those people. And how Nehemiah was not only able to finish the wall, but he was able to reap the harvest. I can't wait to see you next week and talk to you about that. In the meantime, don't let people tear you down off the wall. Don't do it. Let's pray.